Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Hi, hello, Heidi, folks. Feeling good, feeling great, happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Dunker Nation, let's ride, Nikias. It's time to hoop it up on the Quiet Storm.
Oh, the... That might have been the least convincing. Tremendous content. You know, it is indeed time to hoop it up. More Olympic basketball happening. We have plenty to talk about on that front. Same format as the last episode. Talk about what the ladies did. Talk about what the men did. We'll bounce around the other Olympic games. And we'll get into some news items. We also have some mailbag questions to cap things off. So as a quick reminder, you don't have to wait for a prompt for us. If you ever have basketball questions, bored at work, you're watching a game, something pops for you, anything of the sort, email us at dunkerspot@yahoo.com. That is dunkerspot@yahoo.com. We will get to your question. But first, Team USA women's squad defeating Belgium on Thursday, 87-74. Team USA, 47% on twos, not that great. 36% from three, 83% from the line. 25 assists on 29 made shots. You certainly take that. They out-rebounded Belgium by 20, a 48-28 advantage, a 16-7 edge on the offensive glass. Breanna Stewart and Asia Wilson once again leading the way for Team USA. Steve, what were some of your broader takeaways from this game?
Well, actually, I want to start with your takeaway from this game, because I feel like you had a little bit of a interesting journey in this one, because this was a different test for Team USA. Belgium, a little bit of a different challenge. They play with they have more size, number one. They have more versatility offensively, a little bit more physical defensively. So it was a different challenge for Team USA. And so I think that's kind of been, for me, and I'll probably hit on it on both sides of it, that's been the fun of watching these two really good teams have to figure things out on the fly and have to figure out, okay, we have to get ourselves into this position. We have to put ourselves into these spots, and we have to figure out what we're going to do defensively, how we're going to get to what we want to do offensively. And I thought it was a tale of, I don't want to say strictly a tale of two halves, but it was Team USA having to find their way against a Belgian team that was determined at the start to, hey, we're going to move the ball. We can throw it in the post. We can hit you with cuts. On the other end, we're going to be physical. We're going to make you execute. How did you feel about that portion of the program?
I guess just to quickly bounce off of that, you had to talk me off the ledge a little bit early in that second quarter. I was like, what is this? Like, it wasn't a palpable fear. Only, oh my goodness, Team USA is about to lose, et cetera. But it certainly wasn't what we saw in their first matchup. And I think you saw a lot of the early turnovers on offense and on the other side of the floor, like just the amount of stuff that Belgium cycled through offensively. Hey, let's toss to one of our bigs at the elbow. Hey, let's just go pick and pop here, particularly when Brittany Griner checked in. And this is where you saw the Julie Vanlo explosion early in that first quarter. Where she, hey, you're ducking under all these screens, huh? And VG is back there. Well, how about I go this way and then go the other way? And as you duck under, I'm just going to pull up. Let's see what you do about it. And so, like, just watching that happen in the first half, it was, you know, we have a short sample of games so far, but it really felt like Belgium was able to just poke at a lot of stuff, and that just took a little bit to kind of get used to. But to your point, it was nice to see Team USA battle and figure things out. Like, I think Alyssa Thomas coming in the game in particular really helped change some things on both ends. She helped settle them a little bit defensively. The drives, the timely offensive rebounds on the other end, just her ability to just push pace after misses or turnovers, I think was important. As Team USA was just trying to find their flow in the half court, her injecting a little bit of pace and a little bit of randomness, I think, helped in that second quarter. They were able to push the lead to 11, like, midway through the second. And in the second half, they were able to just kind of turn things on. So, like, they needed to face a little bit of adversity. They did a good job of passing that test. It took a little bit for me to orient with. I guess outside of that, what a reminder from Breanna Stewart. It feels weird to say reminder, considering she was, like, really good in the first game as well. But, buddy, 11 points in the first quarter, and those buckets were tough and timely. I think back to, I want to say, early second quarter. After Team USA bucket, Belgium pushed the ball up the floor. Julie Vanlo gives it up. It's immediate back cut against Sabrina Ionescu on the left side of the floor, and Breanna Stewart, like, takes a singular step and then sends the shot into row C, and it was like, ah, Stewie's here. She's doing a little bit of everything. it was really cool to just watch her kind of take over as, again, like, it's been Stewie and Asia just kind of dominating so far for Team USA. But it was a very early dose of Stewie. I will do this. We're not getting the same shots as we were getting in the last game. I'll knock down these tough buckets. I'll get to the line. I'll defend all over the place. And not to say that not like Asia wasn't doing things as well, but it was a very loud start for Stewie. Asia picked up from there, and it was a lot of fun in the second half.
It's a tough combination. And it was one of those things that, Nikias, I brought up to you. I was like, hey, man, have you looked at the minute distribution in the box score?
Yeah. You want to read that out, Steve?
Brianna Stewart, 35 minutes. Asia Wilson, 34 minutes. Only one player above 20 around that. That was Nafisa Collier in this game. So you can kind of see, as Nikias is pointing out, the hierarchy. I think the way they've played on both ends of the floor has helped dictate terms for Team USA. And I think for me, it was more the journey of this game for them. You know, not to reinforce it too much, but when you see a Belgium team that was just really comfortable with, okay, y'all are switching, we have post-ups, we'll just throw right in there. Hey, we'll cut, we'll slice, we'll drive, we can just throw different things at you. That second quarter where it was like, hey, Alyssa Thomas, Stewie, Asia Wilson, you guys are not getting any of that. The activity is up. Yep. We're pushing on the other end. We've sent a message. Now, you come back to start the third quarter, starting unison, but we've got more unders. We're staying solid. We're not just relying on the activity. We're just going to give you a different blend, different look, make you do something different. Now, you think you figure that out, Belgium. Here's Brittany Griner inserted into the game. So we're going to stay solid, but we also have massive rim protection. So if you felt like you were comfortable with just post-ups and drives, that's not necessarily there as much. Then we get back to the switching. And they're getting back to the rotations. They're keeping the ball in the front. So it was one of those things where, because you couldn't necessarily rely on speeding Belgium up, they had to figure it out in different ways. And that was really cool. And now if you're Belgium, it's tough to kind of figure out exactly which thing to hit against them. And Emma Miesman tried in every single way. But
boy, did she.
It makes it tough when Team USA starts locking on that type of level defensively. And then offensively, for a team that you're trying to figure out, okay, what are they going to run in certain situations, to have those two players play at this high of a level, it makes it a little bit easier. You know, we joked about it, but I'm like, hey, Sabrina's going to find Asia Wilson. If she can't find Asia Wilson, she's going to find Brianna Stewart. She's going to find one of them. And then they can just kind of flow from that. Nafisa Collier pushing in transition, AT's drives. I thought the guard play was really good in this one. Salute to Kelsey Plum for her defense. Jackie Young for her defense. They were navigating some screens in that second half, boy. I'll tell you that much.
Boy, were they. Early surge in that second quarter from Jewel Lloyd as well.
Jules, see, that's the thing. It doesn't feel in the box score that those 8 points were a lot, but they were significant. They felt very timely. Like, hey, it's turn up time. Mm-hmm. We got Jewel bringing this up. Like, that's the fun of, like, you can kind of see mixing and matching these players to get the most out of everything for the team.
Actually, on the guard front, I guess two questions for you. One on the guard room and then just one of a general question from the game. With the guard group, 9 minutes for Chelsea Gray, 14 for Diana Taurasi, neither player scored. Like, on one hand, this is the luxury of also having Kelsey Plum and Jewel Lloyd and Jackie Young, Sabrina Ionescu. Like, you don't need those two to be the all W versions of themselves to have success. Was there anything in the game that was concerning to you from either Diana or Chelsea, or was it just these other guards played better, so we're going to roll with them?
Not concerning. I mean, I think it's when you're, it's a rhythm type game at times. And so, because of the game flow or how Team USA started to run things, did you need Chelsea to do what Chelsea did against Japan? Not as much. I think DT didn't necessarily get as much room because Belgium was determined to kind of not be in rotation as much. So, okay, I think the ball just went elsewhere. So it was less like they aren't doing X, Y, and Z, and more game dictates the other portion of it. So that's how it's kind of like mix and match, to where Jewel can have that kind of impact. Kelsey can have that kind of impact. Sabrina can have that kind of impact. Jackie can have that kind of impact because they're different. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean that Chelsea and DT aren't playing well. It just means that the team needed this in this matchup, for me at least.
Okay. Oh, I think that's fair. Like, I wasn't pressing the big red button on either one of them. It was more when I went to the box score, because, like, it felt like like the space from DTU was important. Like she was part of like one of the early Julie Van Lo buckets, but it's like, well, the game plan is just to go under on Julie. And if she makes those shots, you make those shots. Like I felt better about that surge on the second watch than I did live. So I didn't really have any issues with DT and with Chelsea, like her trying to set up Asia early in that first quarter. Like I didn't feel a type of way on second watch with her either. I think to your point, with things not coming as easily in the half court, I do think there was a general emphasis on, okay, we got to get downhill a little bit more. Or in general, we got to pick up the pace when we can. And that's where the instant drives from Kelsey, the instant drives from Jewel Lloyd, you can kind of see where that injection of literal pace may have been more appropriate. And so that's where, again, I wanted to get your take on it, but like I didn't feel like I wasn't super worried either.
Oh, no, you're good. And I wondered, I'll throw this at you, because I think Diane Taurasi had a nice drive in the second half where it was like, oh, head down, paint touch, here we go. Didn't go in. With the way that they can invert the offense, does it just kind of change what you need lineup-wise sometimes? Because I felt like Taurasi kind of got longer stints in the first and the third, so to speak. But it's also like Fee's doing a lot in transition. Brianna Stewart can bring it up. Asia's involved. Like, do you necessarily need some of that all the time?
I think that's fair. No. Like, I think to your inverting the offense point, on one hand, this is just another feather in the cap for DT minutes because of how good she is at ghost screening or just laying the lumber and, like, getting a Fee open or a Stewie open or Asia open if they want to invert it that way. But on the other end, as you kind of mentioned, like, you can just run so much of the offense through those three forwards / bigs that all you need is, okay, we just need more complementary drives to really keep defenses in rotation. And so if you feel better about, you know, Kelsey drives versus Chelsea drives or Jewel Lloyd drives versus Diana Taurasi drives, then yeah, that's going to open up more opportunity for them. So that makes sense to me. The other question I had for you, because I mentioned a little bit earlier, like it was a, particularly in that first half, it was certainly a turnover heavy stretch for Team USA. Like some of those were just, here's the ball is bobbled, it goes out of bounds, oh no. Like there was also like the transition opportunity from Asia in that first half where she goes coast to coast, she goes to a spin, it could have been a foul, but it wasn't a foul, so because she absorbed the contact, it was just a travel. It was like, okay, well some of those you just kind of write off like that's kind of randomness. I was intrigued by, at least early on, how Belgium was trying to deal with some of the post-up attempts from Team USA when they were trying to isolate Asia, like, hey, not necessarily a full front, but no, you're going to have to toss this over the top and we're trusting our length on the back end to kind of meet her on the catch. Do you feel like that may be a template for other teams, or does Belgium just kind of have the personnel to do that where other teams can't?
I think it could be a template because of size. I think the issue is once you show it, now Team USA can find a counter. And so now we can kind of get a little tricky with spacing and different things of that nature, which we kind of saw towards the second half. I feel like there was a couple sets where we're going to play off what you want to do a little bit. Whether it was, okay, I want to say it was like a double drag and then Brittany Griner sealed and the whole right side was empty. And it's like, well, we're not just going to let you guys do that. So I think there's that element as well to where we can kind of now flip that against you. I think that's where the versatility of this team is really fun and unique because yes, you can probably hit us with that, but also we're really good. We can still get to that and we're going to figure it out. Like your favorite lineup, I won't mention the names, but the spacing lineup for Team USA was like, actually, Brianna Stewart, you clear the whole left side's clear for you. Just drive left and we're going to figure that out. Like there's different things they can do to kind of manipulate things.
I was going to say that kind of ties into your earlier point about the luxury Team USA has to just kind of lean on Asia and Stewie to the degree. Like when Belgium was able to kind of muck things up, there was still the let's clear a side for Asia. Let's clear a side for Stewie. And ultimately, y'all still have to guard these players one-on-one or send help, and you do your best from there. Obviously, Team USA doesn't want to get to the point to where they have to just rely on that. They want to be a multiple offense. They want to make sure everyone's a threat. They want to get your defense in rotation. So you don't want to just press the ISO / post spam button with either of those two. But the fact that you can do it is pretty darn cool. Like walking into a game knowing we got at minimum the best two players on the court at any given time, and they're likely playing together. That's pretty neat. Takes a little bit of the pressure off.
Were there any guard or three big combos that popped to you in this one, Nikias?
I love that this is just going to become a recurring bit through Olympic play. I will say, you already mentioned, I just enjoy Asia, Stewie, AT on the floor together. That is a whole lot of defense. That is a whole lot of defense. And like, it's also, I mean, this game in particular was just an interesting test for the bigs on the perimeter. Like, even with BG earlier, who I was referencing her earlier when she came in and she was in a drop, you got Julie knocking down pull-up threes. You did kind of see towards the end of the first, oh, BG's kind of up at the level now in dropping back. Like, this is interesting. Like, how often is Team USA going to ask her to do that? How well can she do that? Because I think with a team this talented, the decision, at least in my opinion, kind of becomes, hey, do we ask BG to play a little bit higher and trust her to do that? Or do we just put in like Alyssa Thomas, or we just bring Asia back, et cetera? Like, we just have so many really good options to where maybe we don't have to be, I don't want to say you don't have to be scheme versatile, but like, maybe we don't have to ask you to do multiple things. We can just get this other player to do the thing that we need them to do. And so as we get into some of these other matchups moving forward, like, I'm curious to see like what the BG minutes in particular are going to look like. Because with her inclusion on the team initially, like, I thought she was going to be penciled in as a starter like DT was. And they were just going to start super big and just kind of go from there. So, like, her coming off the bench was, like, a pleasant surprise. Like, I agree with the decision, but it was a pleasant surprise for me. And so now, and maybe I'm just kind of indexing based on, like, what's happening on the men's side with Team USA. But, like, I do wonder, based on matchup, like, what the BG minutes look like. That's just a thought that I'm kind of keeping in the head as we move forward. But again, you go BG, AT, and Asia, or some combination like that. Like, that's, you know how I feel about the spacing. But ultimately, if you're worried about drives and you're worried about the kind of ease inside the arc, when you can throw that kind of size and length, you're just crowding space and you're making life more difficult, at least in theory. So, like, even if I'm not the biggest fan of those configurations, I at least understand the logic behind them. And I read out the stats before we got into the discussion. Team USA out-rebounded Belgium by 20. They had 16 offensive rebounds. So, like, even when it don't look great, if you're getting 2, 3, sometimes 4 extra cracks at it, you kind of take that math.
I think for me, with the Griner minutes, it's more about the value of them and the impact of them. So if you can go from that starting lineup into BG, and now you have to deal with that on both ends of the floor, like, I feel like it's at some point, it's going to have a massive impact. It's going to be like, well, that's a big problem. So to your point about the spacing, I think the one thing that's interesting, when it's Alyssa Thomas and Asia and Brittany Griner in there together, while it can get a little funny at times, or I should say hashtag funny, there is this element of, okay, Asia drives and now gets into a post up. BG's on the other block. Alyssa Thomas has gotten out of the way, but also someone's getting that rebound if it's a miss. Yeah. So that's where it's like, okay, this is not exactly the most fun deal. It's not the cleanest spacing, but if we now have to deal with those two as threats on the block, and now maybe, I think there was a couple early in the game where Alyssa Thomas just dove off penetration, and it's like, well, I can also get a rebound too. Hey, it's not ideal.
Hey, can I toss you a free throw that might mildly upset you?
What's up?
So would this configuration be a Sun Plus or Sky Plus Plus?
Sun Plus.
We got him, coach. Yes, sir. I figured that one would get you. Any other thoughts or questions or anything you want to bring up from this game in particular?
I'm trying to see. The three-pointer at the end was very funny. Salute to Sabrina for looking like she was going to dribble out the clock and then looking at the bench and then saying, oh, yeah, right, bet. Letting it fly from three and then shushing the crowd.
Can I say that shot became even funnier on the second watch through? Because there was a possession, I want to say like the 7:30 mark of the second quarter. But it's somewhere in that 7-minute range if you want to go back and watch it, if you got Peacock, etc. Sabrina gets like high early pick and roll. Guard tries to duck under, gets wiped out by the screen anyway. And Sabrina just has a wide open pull-up three. And she does not take it. And I was in real time like, what are you doing? And then she tried to force a pass on the interior. And it is just the easiest steal for Belgium in the game. And I'm like, why would you not shoot that? So to go from that possession in the second quarter to the end of the fourth, where it's like, oh, fine, well, I'll take this one. And it's just a deep bomb that flows into the shush emoji. It was just very funny to me to kind of balance those two things. So I'm glad you brought that one up in particular. Also, just a general high Emma Mieseman. You are really good at basketball.
Man, just did not care. Just buckets.
Hey, man. The Pops had Team USA scrambling, just the post up. She did some tough middies in there. Got to the line early. She just did a little bit of everything. It's like, you know, it's like similar to like the Gabby Williams comments I made. Like, I just miss watching you in the W. You're really good at basketball, and it would just be cool to see you in the leagues. So I could watch you more. But no, Emma Mieseman balled out. Also, just a quick note, I guess a whole lot of us just learned how to say Julie Van Lowe.
Okay. She said, don't worry about it.
She did, but like, you know, as someone that has the name that I have, like I appreciate, hey, I ain't trying to say your name wrong if I can say it right. You know what I mean? So I appreciate her giving the clarification. Like just hearing the broadcast say it over and over again, I was like, oh man, I might just have been saying this wrong this entire time.
You gotta put a little bit more sauce on it though.
I gotta work on it.
Julie Van Lough. This okay, little elevation though. Anyways.
we got the Olympics, and I got the Olympic break to get it right. So when we're back on the Mystics games, I'll make sure I have it by then. But certainly a learning opportunity for me. So I'm glad I can finally start getting that one right and stop saying Van Lu. But just to quickly read out some numbers on the front, 23-13 for Asia Wilson, 3 steals. Brianna Stewart, 26 points, 7 rebounds, 4 assists, a steal, and 3 blocks. Alyssa Thomas with 8.6 rebounds, 4 assists, a steal, and a block off the bench. Emma Mieseman, as we were just talking about, 24 points for Belgium, also 4 boards, 3 assists, 2 blocks. Julie with 11 points and 5 assists. And a heck of a victory for Team USA. They have Germany on Sunday morning. Bouncing around to some of the other games. From Wednesday, Spain defeating Puerto Rico 63-62. Megan Gustafson with 18 and 13. Serbia defeating China 81-59. Lee Giroux with 8 points, 11 boards, and a steal. Hanzu with 11 points and 7 rebounds off the bench. Got him up either way. Germany defeating Japan on Thursday. Satu Sabali with 33 points, tied for the 8th most in Olympic history. So congrats to her. 6 boards, 3 assists, and a steal for her as well. Cleone Fevish with 6 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists, 3 steals, and a block. I think she did suffer some sort of foot injury, so keeping an eye on that during that game. Australia defeating Canada 70-65. Sammy Whitcomb with 19 and 10. Also grabbed 6 boards and had 2 steals to boot. Stephanie Talbot with 11, 8, and 6. Kayla George, former ace, 11 points off the bench, nailed 3 threes. Bridget Carleton leading the way for Canada with 19 points, 8 boards, 4 assists, 3 steals, and a block. And France defeating Nigeria 75-54. Gabby Williams stuffing the stat sheet again, 14 points, 5 boards, 7 assists, and 6 steals. Marine Johannes with 15 points and 5 assists off the bench. Steve, if you were able to catch any of those games, was there anything in particular that stood out to you? Was there a player you want to shout out? An action you enjoyed? Anything of the sort?
Hey, Nikias, guess how many 2-point shots Marine Johannes took in that game, in that win over Nigeria?
I am going to assume it's got to be 0 or 1.
Zero.
I'm going to go with 0. That tracks.
15 points, 5 of 9 from the field, 5 of 9 from 3. I missed watching Marine play basketball. Satu, the return of Satu, it's been interesting to watch that continue to build. Because it's like, hey, this is a lot of threes. And then it's like, wait, this is a lot of free throws. And then it's like, hold on. This is kind of coming together.
A very dull thing to say that Satu Sabali is really good at basketball. But to your point, you could just kind of see her tapping back into what we saw with Dallas last year, to where she's mixing in these threes against unders. She is getting all the way to the basket. And there really isn't a great matchup for her. And like just that inside outside dynamic is just really tough with the way the Germany squad plays. And so just watching her just get all of the buckets and knock down all of the shots from the perimeter is very cool. But continue.
I think it was nice for Australia to get the guards going again. Like you mentioned, the scoring from Talbot and Sammy Wickham, for them to get 16 assists after a game where it looked like things were really rough against Nigeria, that was important for them to get back on track.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that's just going to be interesting going forward, I'm actually interested to see, how have you felt about the Megan Gustafson Olympics?
You know, if I could put the hat on very quickly, I've mixed feelings. Because she has been hooping, to say the least. Like, the numbers speak for themselves. But as I talked about on the last pod, like, her usage has been really fun. Like, they will just dump it down to her on the block and say, go get you one. We'll go pick and pop with you. We'll run you off of stuff. We'll have you on the perimeter and having you drive from 25 feet. And you can just have all the fun. And so I'm watching her fill all these gaps offensively. And then we're going to get back to WNBA play. And she's going to play like 14 minutes. And I'm like, hey, so where is the, you know? So, like, I'm trying to, like, manage expectations. But, like, I've really enjoyed watching her play. Like, she has clearly been, I think she's just been the best player on the floor in the games that she's played in. It's been a fun experience. I guess I'm just curious to see, like, if the usage will change at all once the W season starts back up. That's kind of the thing that's kind of swirling in the back of my head.
Once again, I want to give a shout-out to Hanzu. 14 minutes, 10 field goal attempts. Mm-hmm. It's my dog.
It's what she does. Actually, can I ask you an Australia question?
Yes.
How have you felt about the Atlanta Smith run so far?
Oh, I know what's happening here.
What do you mean? I'm asking a question.
I feel like the defense has been very strong. The shooting has been a little up and down, but I feel like that's just kind of been an Australia deal. I'm trying to figure out what the rotation is, because it just feels like they have multiple bigs that they want to play. And, like, Ezzy would look all world, and then it's like Ezzy's out of the game for an extended amount of time. And I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah. It also doesn't help. I will say, it also doesn't help, at least in relation to, like, this past game. It also doesn't help when, like, Ezzy just picks up the random foul where it's like, hey, what are you? You don't have to do that. Or you don't have to challenge this like that. Or you don't have to reach here. And I love Ezzy. And, like, in theory, like, this is the arena for her to, like, fully expand. Like, again, making, like, the W/Olympic parallels again. Like, seeing how her usage has expanded with the Storm this year. Getting more drives, more handoffs and stuff like that. You would think, like, Team Australia, like, hey, let's let Ezzy do all of the things. Like, naturally within the team construct. But if we're talking about hierarchy, let's let Ezzy do a whole bunch of stuff. We know the defense is going to be there. It's going to be cool. And so for me, I know the question was about Atlanta, but, like, I guess I wish there was a little bit more consistency for Ezzy in the run. Like, we have more games to go, so it may not be a big deal. But I'd like to see a little bit more there. And, like, I asked you the Atlanta question specifically because it's, I guess, like, it's similar to the guard question with Team USA, to where, like, it didn't feel bad in watching, and then you go to the box score and it's like, oh, it was this. I think last time I checked the box score with the Australia-Canada game, like, I think Atlanta was scoreless at the time. I was like, huh. Well, this is interesting. Like, I haven't felt like she's played poorly, but it hasn't been, like, the loud reckoning with her either. So I just wanted to see, like, where you were with Atlanta. Any closing thoughts before we move to the men's side?
Let's move to the men's side.
All right, let's move to the men's side, where Team USA was able to get a victory over South Sudan on Wednesday, a 103-86 victory. New starting lineup for Team USA in this game. Steph Curry, Devin Booker, Jason Tatum, LeBron James, and Anthony Davis. Team USA converted 60% of their twos, shot 43% from three on 30 attempts, shot 80% from the line as well. 29 assists on 37 made baskets. It's pretty sturdy work. 66 bench points for Team USA. So we will dig deeper into what their second unit did with the discussion. But, Steve, what were some of your broader takeaways from this one?
So Jason Tatum started, huh?
He sure did.
I'm not starting there. I think for me, it was a much better effort on defense from Team USA. And I think when you counter what South Sudan was able to do in the exhibition game versus what they were able to do in this game, it was easy to see it was very different from the start. Team USA wanted to shut all of that down. We're going to contain penetration. We're going to mix in switching. And that's the biggest thing. We're going to have a lot of activity. We're going to work in the passing lanes. So when you go back to the exhibition contest, South Sudan, hey, we're here. we're driving the basketball. And so I think one of the things when you're a team that is coming together, talent or not, you don't necessarily have all of your defensive rotations locked in. So you get beat off the bounce. Who's helping from where? Who's got the next rotation, et cetera, et cetera. You're not scoring. They're getting out in transition. That was kind of what they got hit. That was not the case in this game. That was the team USA was locked in on that. And so when you took away the drives and you took away the driving kicks and the threes, they got bogged down the half court. Everything was tough, trying to get to the next option and the second option, the third option. They were working early to scram Steph Curry out of matchups. Like, they were just locked in on that end of the floor. And the thing is, it was the first unit that was locked in. And then you look at that second unit that they had, and you go from Steph Curry, Devin Booker, Jason Tatum, LeBron James, Anthony Davis to Derek White, Drew Holiday, Anthony Edwards, Kevin Durant, Bam Adebayo. And it's like, well, not only is that a lot of switching, not only is that a lot of activity, that's just not a lot of fun to deal with. Because now we have Kevin Durant, weak side help. We have Bam Adebayo switching on. We have Drew and Derek White just, hey, would you like to just come this way or that way? It doesn't really matter. I'm here. And then Anthony Edwards, be active. Just be active, man. All you got to do is be active. So I think that was interesting. I think back to, and I don't want to go too hard, but it's like, we'll talk about like lineup stuff and rotation stuff. This is a Team USA that is taking what they do well and working to figure it out. So, hey, you know what? We want to switch. Joel Embiid, we don't want you to have to switch. Take a seat. We'll do Anthony Davis. We'll do Bam at the five. We'll basically do LeBron and KD alternating at the four. And then, hey, would you look at that? We played LeBron and Kevin Durant together.
That was neat.
Safe space.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, I won't even go there. Remind me to go there later. But I thought okay. Bam was really good in that one. I think he set the tone. He was consistent. That Team USA, you mentioned the bench points they had the whole game. Team USA's bench had 40 points in the first half. South Sudan had 36 total. So they set the tone from the start.
Yeah, it was 26-14 after the first quarter. And I guess, you know, as we talk about, like, international play and stuff, like I find I'm just a second unit merchant in a lot of these competitions. So that's just neat. But, buddy, when they rolled out Derek White, Drew Holiday, Anthony Edwards, Kevin Durant, Bam Adebayo, I freaking lost it. Because to your point, like, the defense is already locked in early. Like, we're not letting y'all get any of this easy stuff. We're switching. We're closing out gaps. If you are able to beat us, we're passing off these drives and we're able to toggle the matchups from there on the fly. You're not going to have fun. We're going to get out and run. We're going to get some easy stuff in transition. LeBron's going to get downhill early. And it was just a joy to watch. And then that second unit comes in and I was so, can I put the hat back on? I guess the men's hat at this point. Hey, Bam Adebayo, that brother is really good at basketball. Hit a three from either quarter. The defense was absurd. I know he's having a lot of fun playing with guards that can just feed him on the interior and toss him lobs or just penetrate the basket, draw an extra defender, and here's this laydown pass that Bam can finish. I know he's just having a blast playing with this talent, but he popped on both ends of the floor. And, like, the box score doesn't really do it justice just to how well he played. But even with that, 18.7 boards, a steal, and two blocks off the bench. Like, you certainly take that production. But this was his game. He was the louder story for me with what he was able to do on both ends. I think for a Team USA squad that in general wanted to switch more, what better big do you want in a switching situation than Bam Adebayo? He certainly fits the mold there. And then offensively, again, just a little bit of everywhere. I think just in general, as you know, expanding to the showcase games as well, like watching Bam get more and more comfortable with his jumper and with threes in particular. And like we saw him sprinkling in more threes in that Celtics series that I'm sure nobody really wants to talk about at this point. It's one of those things where I'm just like, I'm excited to see what the next regular season is going to look like. Like, is this the year Bam takes like 2.5 threes a game? Not a big number at all, but like it's a massive jump from where he's been in his career. So like, that's just been like a fun development thing that I've been able to track. But Bam was really good. The bench was good. Anthony Edwards, in addition to being a good basketball player, you can just tell how much fun he's having with the experience overall. Like, just one, he's celebrating after just about everything, whether he's involved or not. And then you're reading the quotes about how excited he is just to play alongside Kevin Durant, and I get to pass it to him, he gets to pass it to me. It's just very a wholesome content on, in that regard specifically. What's up?
Well, I was going to raise my hand, and I was going to say, Anthony Edwards' direct quote, I love that he's coming off the bench. I get to play with him, so I hope Coach keeps bringing him off the bench. I get to pass it to him, he gets to pass it back. That's probably one of my biggest dreams ever, so that's dope. The man's just having the time of his life right now.
He sure is. Just again, with the basketball, the other Olympic competitions, like Anthony Edwards is soaking all of this in. So that's been pretty cool to see. But man, like Bam is the story from the player side, but like just overall, the defense was just really good from Team USA in this one. And I think if that's going to be their foundation, like I don't know what you do with that. If they're going to be the turn your water off team in the half court, and now they just get to flow into a whole bunch of early offense stuff. This is LeBron attacking your defense when it isn't set. This is Devin Booker getting to attack your defense when it isn't set. This is Kevin Durant getting to attack your defense when it isn't set. This is Anthony Edwards. This is Drew Holiday or Derek White. And now they're filling gaps and keeping the ball moving. And now you're scrambling even more. It's Steph Curry filling the lane in transition. Which actually, on that note, this has been an interesting two-game stretch for Steph Curry so far. I guess similar to the guard question on the women's side, like, is there any concern area for you with Steph, or is it just that this is the matchup, or this is just a weird game, he's going to be fine?
This one was unique in the sense that South Sudan just said, hey, we're going to attack you since y'all are switching everything. Mm-hmm. And so will Team USA be in that switch heavy mode? Will other teams be willing to just hit that button as many times as South Sudan was willing to hit it? But that part, yeah. I'm not sure about. Like, I don't know if that's going to be every team's game plan just because the game is different. Do you have concerns about that in the fourth? Maybe. But Team USA has had enough defensive personnel around where it's not like, hey, I'm just absolutely concerned that Steph Curry can't contain the ball and it's going to be a liability or anything like that. Here's the thing with Steph Curry, right? He's not shooting the ball well. And I don't think anyone's ever going to be like, hey, he's just not a good shooter. It's like he can very quickly erase that the next game. He comes out and hits the first two shots. Well, there went that thought. What I mean?
Yeah, we had fun. Yeah.
You know, like I just don't. It's. I'm sure it's not fun. I'm sure he doesn't want to go 0-for-6 from three and 1-for-9 from the field and then have South Sudan just say, hey, it's cool.
Get
that
over
you're,
here. Yeah.
It's cool that you're screening for LeBron James on that end. We really appreciate and enjoy that. We're also going to put you in action on this end. Like, that's not ideal. Like, no one wants that, but I feel like that's an easily correctable deal. And I imagine he'll want to play better, A, for himself, and B, for the whole team. Like, I wouldn't, like, raise my hand as super concerned right now.
Okay. That's fair.
And actually, plus this team is built to kind of help that. Drew is usually in the starting lineup. If Steph is having a day like that, we have the defensive guards. Like, this isn't the Team USA of, hey, we have to play defense with this kind of energy and activity, and if we don't do that this way, no, our defense is the second unit. Like, I poke fun at you because you love the second unit in that second game. The first game, it was just Anthony Davis, Bam, Derek White, Katie, and Ant. Like, it's still, hey,
yeah,
we're going to have four superior defensive players coming off the bench, so do what you got to do, and we'll make it work.
I got you. Oh, also, just on the second unit note, we did get to see Tyrese Halliburton in the second game. That brother came in, immediately hit two threes. It was like, stay ready so you don't have to get ready.
Hey, salute to Tyrese. He knew the assignment.
He sure did.
Open, bop. Open again, bop. Yep, let's go.
Let's have some fun. I guess to the Tatum front, you didn't start there, and thank you for not starting there. Did get to start. How did you feel about, I guess, less about the output specifically, but more, I guess, the usage?
Define usage for me, because here's the thing about the usage. What does usage mean in a lineup that features LeBron James and Stephen Curry and Devin Booker? What does usage mean?
I mean, I guess that's the bit. It did feel like he was just off the ball quite a bit.
So tell me how you felt about the usage. How about that? Let's start there.
Okay. Well, for me, like it felt like it was pretty quiet. And from there, it's like if Tatum's going to be in primarily as, hey, you just be spacer and switch guy, one, he's really good at that. So like it's not going to be a problem per se. But I do wonder if there is a little bit more room for more. Because, like, one of the comments that I made during the showcase, I think I said something similar on the last pod. It was like, it's never a bad thing for LeBron to have the ball. But, like, I don't want Team USA to get to the point to where they are leaning super heavily on LeBron. You got to make all these decisions. And so, like, I do just wonder, generally, is there a possession or two to where you can go Tatum pick and roll or Tatum post and you go split action away from the ball, et cetera, just so LeBron doesn't have to, like, shoulder as much of an offensive burden in the half court? And so I guess for me, if you were putting Tatum in the starting lineup, it would have been nice to see a little bit more with him on the ball. Because it was also just kind of clear, like, he didn't have the same rhythm in this one. I guess going from DNP to you start can't just be an adjustment no matter how good you are. So that's why I'm not pressing the big red button on it, but it was kind of evident, like, Tatum wasn't really in the flow like that. So that's where I was just kind of curious. Because, like, they went opening set to try to get Tatum the ball, and it was a turnover.
Yeah, the first set was him. It was for him. The whole right side was empty. Steph Curry sits a back screen for him, and LeBron just did the behind-the-back pass, and it just didn't work. So, you know, I'll ask you this question, and I didn't mean to cut you off. You were done. But part of Jason Tatum's value to Team USA would probably be attacking in transition, right?
Yes.
Here's an issue. You're Anthony Davis. You're Joel Embiid. You're insert player here. You get the rebound. Jason Tatum is running the right wing. LeBron James is running the left wing. Which way are you throwing the basketball?
You are throwing it to the left side of the floor.
And that's no disrespect to Tatum. I'm just saying that's just a natural instinct. So that takes a little bit of a hit right there, right? I think the encouraging part was early on when he had either, I can't remember if it was a cut or a drive, and he dumped it off to Anthony Davis because he got the ball off the defense scrambling and was able to make a quick decision and made a quick play. And that's pretty much it. Like, I don't necessarily know how much on ball he needs. I think he just needs to make quick decisions when he's out there. I think it's just, it's a gap of, okay, what's going to happen. And I think actually, no, it was a drive. LeBron pushed it post up, showed help, kicked the Tatum one pass away, drove the closeout, hit Anthony Davis. Solid. Yeah. I just don't know how much of the reps are going to come to him outside of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think that's why Steve Kerr designed that first play for him. And now you have to adjust. Like, Devin Booker has to kind of play that off-ball role, but he's involved in more movement. So maybe it's getting Tatum involved in more movement. I'm intrigued to see what the starting lineup's going to be, because I assume Drew's going to come back. But I believe if reports are true, Drew got a little bit of a minor ankle injury and is questionable for the game on Saturday against Puerto Rico. So that's it. I don't know. Like, here's the thing though. I just think for Tatum, what unit does he work with? It can't be the second unit.
Respectfully. It can't be the second.
Respectfully. There are two people on that second unit who are going to shoot the basketball. I mean that with all due respect.
No, that's true. I mean, I guess secondarily, we can bounce right back to Tatum. Do you think we get Kevin Durant as a starter at any point?
I don't think so.
Or do you think they're just kind of locked in on, hey, you just be super scorer with the second unit that has a fun?
I don't. Why do it? And I think, especially if KD buys into it, I think we have the quote, it's basketball. It really doesn't matter who starts. It's about who finished the game, who put their impact on the game while they're in the game. So I just try and do my best to impact it in any way I can. I don't think KD really cares. So if KD's going to be a super stub, you know what I mean? It's a squeeze, honestly, because if Joel Embiid comes back into the rotation, hey, two bigs plus KD plus Ant plus guard, you know, it gets tricky. I need people to understand that. We've sat for years and talked about how USA is a talent first team. They've actually built a team that has A, talent, and B, versatility, and C, different looks that they can give each other. And it is what it is. But I think for Tatum, but it's just like, I think the lack of transition opportunities for him, because again, Steph Curry is also in that first unit. So he's going to look to attack early or get a handoff and take a look early. So I think there's more gaps for him. I'd be intrigued to see if he starts again.
Okay. So that's what I had on that front.
Did you unlock a rant? I'm sorry.
No. I just want to see where you were. It's just like all of the the outcry, Jason Tatum didn't play in the first game, but then he gets in this one, and it's like the opening set, and also, hey, you were off the ball. And it's like, well, are you happy now? He's locking minutes. And now he's like fifth in the lineup in usage. So is this better? Is this more quote-unquote respect for Mr. Tatum?
There was one play for Tatum that I did enjoy and where they were flowing, doing too much stuff. LeBron again gets in the post. Tatum cuts from the wing, replaces back to the corner. And then they set like, AD sets like a flare for him kind of, and it's a skip pass. And he just missed the shot. But it's like, okay, there's some more meat on the bone than people are expecting. It's just not going to be the full Tatum package that people are expecting. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of Team USA deal. You know what I mean? How many post-ups does Anthony Davis truly get?
Not a bunch. I will say, though, that brother been sealing his tail off. he wants some. Hey, that's the one thing I give to Anthony Davis and Bam. Specifically Bam. Those brothers, they are running in transition and they are finding a defender. The paw is up. We are putting you underneath the basket. Give me the basketball. Sometimes they get it, sometimes they don't. But they are absolutely nailing those little things. So to your design post-up point, like, no, AD ain't getting a bunch of those. He's doing his work to get them. And I think if you do get into some cross-match situations, like, they can punish those. I think we saw that more in, like, the first game, more so in, like, showcase action that we've seen in the Olympics so far, which is feeding them on those random seals and stuff. But it's there. It's there. I'm trying to think, is there any other player I wanted to mention? I guess we've already talked about LeBron and just the trust that he gets and stuff. No Embiid, are you expecting him to start against Puerto Rico? Or where would you go with that? Do you just stick with his lineup and get a little bit more burn? Do you feel like Puerto Rico's a better matchup for him?
I would expect him to be back.
Okay.
I think they really want to get that win and get that one seed and get that point differential. So I wouldn't be surprised. What do you expect? What do you think?
If I had to guess, I think we get some bench minutes from Embiid against Puerto Rico. I don't know if he goes back to the starting lineup. Like, for me, basketball idealist, et cetera, like, I just would have started hashtag smaller this entire time. Like, I would prefer AD at the five with this group. I understand the value of having Embiid. Like, one, he's really good, but two, just the size element that he brings and just gives Team USA a different look on both ends. Like, for me, like, I would just prefer, let's just go Bron at the four, AD at the five. You have Bam at the five. You want to move to the four and bring Embiid in there. That's also cool, et cetera. So if I had to guess, like, I think Embiid plays. I don't know if he starts. I think Team USA sticks with this look, and we get Embiid getting, like, he's probably like the first or second player to check in. And he can just kind of maul second units. Like, as I think about it, it's really interesting to kind of compare, like, both of the Team USA squads and their roster construction. And so, like, I guess, like, in this example, like, Embiid would kind of be like the BG to where, like, again, I was surprised that she didn't just get the start off rip. Embiid did, and now it's just kind of flipped. But I think Embiid can have that similar, who exactly on your second unit can deal with this guy? Like, y'all ain't got nobody on your first unit that can really deal with him. But who's on your second unit that can deal with Joel Embiid? Like, it just feels like there's room for him to be, like, a compliment to, again, like, the KD bucket getting, the Ant bucket getting. Y'all can do a bunch of stuff. If all us fails, let's dump it down to big fella and he's getting us a good shot or he's getting to the free throw line.
I'm afraid I got some bad news.
Oh, no.
per Ben Golliver, Steve Kerr. The DMP CD was because of the team speed. This is the fastest team in the tournament we're going to play. We wanted to match up. The whole game today was going to be about switching and staying in front of people, which is, you know, we talked about that. That's why Joel Embiid didn't play. But the plan was to go LeBron, Steph, Devin Booker, Drew, and Embiid against Puerto Rico.
Huh. Well, there you go.
That was from the 31st, Embiid, though.
Oh, okay.
And another thing. Here's the thing. Hey, man. Can we stop having this conversation? Can we talk about the basketball that is actually being had? If you're going to sit here and tell me it's not interesting that Team USA is so good, them dominating is not interesting, how can you sit here and tell me watching LeBron James and Stephen Curry and Kevin Durant play basketball together with Bam playing like this and Anthony Davis playing like this is just not interesting? Like, come on, we got to have a conversation about that. You guys are making up all these things about, well, this is an embarrassment and these guys should, we haven't heard a thing from these guys about it. We've not heard a thing about it. Like, We don't have to do that. This is not the NBA regular season. We shouldn't do it then either. But let this great amount of talent win a gold medal or chase it to win a gold medal, and let's appreciate it while it's here. Like, this has not happened all the time. We don't have to sully it with all this nonsense of, oh, what's about this and who's going to not play and da-da-da. Stop. Watch the game or watch a replay of gymnastics. There's beautiful things happening all over the place, man.
There we go. Hey, can I make a bad false equivalence so I can just be angry for like 10 seconds? So like we could, okay, no, it's not going to be like problematic. Give you credit. But no, like I am part of this group specifically. But like we complain about what the All-Star game looks like, and we get all this talent and nobody plays hard, etc. And now we get Team USA with all these really good players, they playing together and they playing hard and they winning, and then y'all don't want to see that either.
Oh.
What do you enjoy? Like, I don't think, like, what? Hey.
Oh, when you put it that way.
You know what I mean? Like, so maybe it wasn't as bad of an equivalent as I thought. But, like, you're getting what you want. You're getting full throttle Bron, full throttle Steph, full throttle KD, and all these young up-and-coming stars or superstars. And again, like, it was a defensive clinic in the second game. They ran wild in the first game. And we...
That's fine.
I suppose. Any closing thoughts or questions or concerns heading into the Puerto Rico matchup?
No, just interested to see how they grow and what the challenge is going to be in that game. I think every team has been different. So how do they come out? What are they able to do on both ends of the floor? And how they reestablish themselves and grow throughout the tournament?
Okay, I got you. I will say, like, duh, you want to have your defense early. But I think in this Puerto Rico matchup, they definitely want to have their defense early. Because this has not been, to be kind, the best start to the Olympic play for Puerto Rico. And so I would imagine they are going to come into this matchup fired up. And wanted to make a stamp. So it would be important for Team USA to bring the noise.
Nikos, Puerto Rico's a minus 52. I think they're going to come in and try and turn up to end this play.
Yeah,
so I don't think it's going to be a runaway game. I think it's going to be a little bit of a fight.
Yeah. See, I was trying to be kind, but you know, you brought the...
My bad.
It is what it is. No, you good.
See, this,
you
this
good.
Is why they don't let me bring numbers.
And you know y'all been outscored by no. But as I mentioned earlier, just to get some numbers in, Bam Adebayo with 18 points, 7 rebounds, a steal, and 2 blocks off the bench. LeBron with 12 points, 7 rebounds, and 5 assists. Kevin Durant with 14 points, 3 assists, and 3 steals off the bench. Devin Booker with 10 points, 6 assists, and a steal. Again, Booker's just been really solid on both ends of the floor. I think he deserves the hat tip. Suns fans should probably be pleased. They should be very pleased with what they've seen from Devin Booker throughout this entire stretch. Anthony Edwards with 13 points and 3 steals off the bench. Moving away from Team USA, Canada defeating Australia, 93-83. We talked about this one briefly on the last pod, but RJ Barrett with 24.7 rebounds, 5 assists. Shea with 16 points with 8 of 10 from the field. Dylan Brooks with 16. Josh Giddey with 19.7 boards, 6 assists. Jock Landale with 16 and 12 and dished out 4 assists as well. Dyson Daniels with 10.6 boards, 3 assists, a steal, and 2 blocks. It's been a nice tourney for Dyson Daniels as well. I'm sure Hawks fans are keeping a close eye on Mr. Daniels. See what the role is going to look like in Atlanta next season. Dante Exum with 15 points in 17 minutes off the bench. France defeating Japan in overtime, 94-90. I'm going to press pause right here. The end of that fourth quarter specifically, I was confused. I was exciting because there was just a lot of things happening. But end of game execution is important. And as we got into the overtime, shot selection is also very important. I do not believe France had any business winning that basketball game. Some nice resiliency from them, but also, hey, hashtag what was that? But Wimby with 18, 11, and 6, 2 steals and 2 blocks as well. Evan Fournier with 14 points and 6 assists. Rudy Gobert with 7 points and 15 rebounds, 6 of those coming on the offensive glass. I also had a pair of blocks. Rui Hachimura with 24 points. He was ejected in the fourth with, I think it was the second unsportsmanlike conduct call, which we also have to, we got to be for real. I did not, the replay of that one is egregious. I don't think that should have happened the way that it did. But neither here nor there. Yuki Kawamura with 29 points. He got him up. I went 6 of 15 from 3 in that game. Also grabbed 7 boards, dropped 6 assists in that one. Germany with an 86-73 victory over Brazil. Serbia with a 107-66 victory over Puerto Rico. Nikola Jokic nearly racking up a triple-double in that one with 14 points, 15 rebounds, 9 assists. Also tallied 2 steals and a block in that one. And then Brazil defeating Japan, no Rui Hachimura in that one. Left the team with a calf injury. Bruno Caboclo with 33-17. Have not got to watch that game yet, but buddy, I am tuning in to see how on earth he put together a 33-17 game. And then Greece and Australia. Greece getting a 77-71 victory in the please make your free throws game. Giannis with 27-6. Thomas Walker with 18 points. Made some big threes down the stretch of that one. Jock Landale with 17-8. Dyson Daniels with 11-6-8 and a steal. Steve, any takeaways from any of those games if you were able to catch them?
I feel like Japan-Brazil is going to be a game that you enjoy watching and trying not to tell anybody that you enjoy watching. Not just because of okay. Bruno Caboclo dropping the 33 in, what, 17 or 18? Brazil shot 17 of 28 from 3. Japan shot 16 of 41 from 3.
Japan gets them up, dog.
The Greece-Australia, very interesting. As Giannis and them got the win.
Hey, man, make your free throws.
Oh, well, go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, go ahead. Just 2K brand. Go to free throw golf. Get your 18 points for the 3 stars. It just we got to make free throws.
A combined 16 of 32 doesn't do it for you?
No, it doesn't. It sure doesn't.
Sorry, man.
Shout out to our dear watch party pal Elway. Imagine missing free throws.
They didn't have to imagine. They did it.
It sure did. Gracious.
I think for me, I'm trying to look up the standings real quick. Sorry.
No, you're good. You're good.
I'm trying to figure out all this means. I'm going back to your French-Japan rant. And for me, it was more so, hey, you're up 4 points. Rudy Gobert has rolled into the paint. There's only a need for one person to be in the paint. Two of y'all don't have to go in there. And then now you're scrambling, you close out, and the world's like, that's a foul. I don't want to hear it. Just don't put yourself in that spot. That's just me, though. I'm being grumpy. I think for me, Canada, listen, man, we want to talk about RJ Barrett?
Yes. Everybody's driving left and right and knocking down shots.
Like between Canada and Germany, would you say those have been like teams 2 and 3?
Yeah.
So far?
Yeah. Like I wish I felt better about France's guard play. Like overall, I've enjoyed the Frank Ntilikina experience. But like, if I'm starting with the Frank Ntilikina experience, that's part of the, know what I mean? But
can I be respectfully messy for a second?
Sure.
Now by France's gameplay, I mean, guard play, do you mean a certain guard getting a high usage in pick and roll?
That's certainly part of it. Yeah. It's a whole lot of never Google. And again, the fact that he even has to take on that much usage kind of speaks to what the rest of the guard room is. You know what I mean? So that's where if it was better, then I think I would be a lot more afraid of France.
Can I be respectfully messy?
Sure.
Does he have to or does he want to?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
I think that's where we're at on that one. But continue.
But no, because I think for me, those two have really popped, and I'm trying to figure out, like, what are the matchups going to be? That's where I was trying to see, okay, where are we at right now? Because I won't lie to y'all. I'll be honest. I have to do a lot of Googling of the standings in this scenarios.
You're getting into point difference talk. Because, like, actually, I'll press pause right there. How do you feel about the scoring system? 2 points for a win, you get a point for a loss anyway?
This feels like something that would bother you a little bit.
It does, because like, why? We're in the Olympics. Why are you getting points for losing? That sounds a lot more harsh than I intended, but like, what? For what? We could just have, hey, this team went 2-0 or 3-0. Here's your 4 or 6 points. Y'all ain't getting no dub.
But we got drama. We got stakes. Every game matters.
Drama and stakes anyway. It does. When are you going home soon? It's the grandest stage of a ball. We here.
It's how many top three seeds make it two? I don't want to sound dumb on this pod. It's fine. I'll figure it out. But hey.
No, I think top two advance to the knockout stage when I'm thinking. And like, jokes aside, like, I know there is like a reason that it's like 2 points at 1 point, respectfully. But like, respectively, I guess is the word.
Okay. You know what? I can't wait till you got to figure out the third place teams in advance. I can't wait.
Hey, here's the wild card. No. My thing is like, we got a scoring system for wins and losses, and then we got point differential. So like, you know, we'll have more answers by the weekend. Tell you what.
I thought you were going to have a positive rant about point differential and that these points matter.
I like it being No, it does. Like, you know me. You've been doing this pod with me for a while. I'm here for point differential mattering. Play to the gosh darn buzzer sounds. You know what I mean?
Oh, okay. All right. That's enough. Enough out of you, buddy. What else we got?
Did not like that one.
Goodness gracious.
Sheesh. Just circling back to Germany versus Brazil. Like, again, Dennis Schröder remains a walking paint touch. In typical Nikias fashion, I really enjoy the Isak Bonga minutes where he just comes in like, hey, you can just defend whoever we ask you to. Also, you can sometimes bring the ball up and initiate action for us. And so like, I've enjoyed that portion for Germany. Also, while we're on Brazil, apparently I was going to get yelled at for my tweet the other day with Mr. Santos. And the amounts of bucket getting that he's been getting during this tournament. But shout out Iago Santos, who is incredibly fun to watch play basketball. And teams have not been able to keep him from getting to his spots. And he's listed at, 5'10", I think is the bit. But he's been all over the place. I've enjoyed the mix of drives and shooting. And he's a really fun playmaker on top of that, so. Give him a high pick and roll and let him go to work. That part's been fun for me. I think that's the big stuff for me. Do you have any closing thoughts on the Olympic play before we get into the news portion?
Let's hit the news. Hit the news.
Okay. All right, let's get to the news. In the welcome back segment, Jared Allen signing a 3-year, $91 million max extension. Allen coming off a career year. Averaged 16.5 points, converted 64% of his twos. Grabbed 10.5 rebounds, a career high 2.7 assists, and averaged over a block per game last season. I'm a little surprised by this one. Not that he doesn't deserve it, but like I guess I'm more surprised that Cleveland was just able to lock in their entire core, because it felt like heading into the offseason, we're going to bring Evan Mobley back, but we don't know what's happening with Donovan Mitchell yet. Jared Allen's in trade rumors. Darius Garland is also in trade rumors, incumbent upon if Donovan Mitchell gets his money, et cetera. And then the offseason just turns into Mitchell's back, you know, max extension for Evan Mobley, max extension for Jared Allen, and Darius Garland isn't going anywhere. So I guess, like, I don't even think it's bad. Like, I'm glad they were able to lock those guys in, and obviously the players deserve their money. I just didn't, based on the smoke that was coming out from Cleveland after the postseason, I didn't expect their offseason to go like this. I am sure they are very happy in the building to lock all these players in.
Does it feel like just the way of the world, especially for your team? I think it's something we've talked about over and over again. We have talent. Let's keep our talent. And then let's see what moves we have to make going forward. And now in the back of my head, I'm wondering, you know, if you're Jared Allen, is it easier to go ahead and make sure, hey, I have this coming over the next 5 years? As opposed to, okay, I go back out on the market, who has the space for what I'm looking for? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, how daunting does that become? You know, and I don't want to say the CBA apron world, but how daunting does that become? Because, okay, sign and trade to whom? You know, what suitors are available? So does it kind of now kind of become like a handshake between parties where, hey, we want you here. This is our plan. We can't necessarily go full, okay, we're getting you out of there. Because if you trade or let Jared Allen leave, how do you replace him? You can't, it's not as easy as before. And you could, y'all can yell at me if I'm wrong, but that's just the feeling that I get looking at ways. Or it's like, we can't necessarily copy and paste the way we used to. So, and also if you're Cleveland, for me, I've always said, hey, let's truly find out how far this group can go. And this, whether it's this is the last year or the second, Jared Allen's gotten better. Evan Mobley's gotten better. Donovan Mitchell's gotten better. Darius Garland has gotten better. Have they all played to the height of what they can play? Probably not. But we've seen enough in this Cleveland Cavs team to where let's see what the home run swing looks like and move forward from there.
Hmm. Oh, that makes sense. And so, like, you know, just to bounce off what you said, even with them being able to lock in, like, Jared Allen in particular here, that doesn't mean that they can't pivot if we hit, you know, we end the next season and Cleveland's like a first round out or something like that. And they find, okay, the two big thing just really doesn't work, or okay, the Garland Mitchell thing really doesn't flow the way that we need it to. And it's a lot of salary allocated to them. We need wing help, et cetera, et cetera. So like they still can pivot. But yeah, I'm just impressed. Cleveland was able to lock in their talent like this. And for Jared Allen, he was just tremendous last season. Like we had a lot of discussions, you know, neither of us had official award ballots, but I think we both heavily considered Jared Allen for all defense last year. He really perked off offensively as a finisher. Did better against switches, was a quicker decision maker on the short roll. The rebounding was always there. And so, like, there is still upside for him. He started experimenting more with mid-range jumpers last year. Like, I'm curious to see just what his offensive package is going to look like next season. But well-deserved money for him. He is one of the best centers in basketball. And so just a quick congrats to Jared Allen. Luke Kennard finally re-signing with the Memphis Grizzlies. We heard very early on in free agency, like, no, but you coming back. We got moves to make, et cetera. And here we are in August, and he gets the one-year $11 million deal to return to the Grizzlies across, I guess, a season and a half with the Memphis Grizzlies, 63 total games, 11 points per game, 45% on twos, 48% from three, which is absurd. Three boards, three assists for Luke Kennard. And the Knicks bringing back Precious Achiuwa on a one-year $6 million deal. Precious Achiuwa averaged 7.6 points, 7.2 rebounds, and a shade over a block per game in 49 games with the Knicks. He started 18 games in those starts. He averaged 12.5 points, 9.5 rebounds, a steal, and nearly two blocks per game. Any thoughts on Luke Kennard or Precious Achiuwa and their fits with their respective teams?
Well, Luke Kennard, the shooting for Memphis, that's going to be important. And this Memphis team, I'm very intrigued to see what that rotation looks like. Because you went from, hey, what do we have, to, hey,
we got a whole bunch of stuff.
What don't we have? So I think that was important for them to be able to retain that shooting. And I think the lineup versatility is going to be really fun. So that was a no-brainer. I get it. Mm-hmm. The one-year portion, hey, we'll see what's going on there. But talk about that a different day. Uh-huh. The Precious back to New York, I like that. I think he was a good fit. He fit into what Tibbs wanted, which is important. Like, I didn't know Precious Achiuwa would become a Tibbs guy. And it was fun to watch him grow into that defensively, offensively, earn some of that trust. And I'm very intrigued to see how much trust he gets. Like, is he going to be, because they've done a lot of good things, but they are now trying to fit a Hartenstein size gap into what their success has been. And you're not going to be able to do it apples to apples. But, okay, is it going to be a combination of Precious at the five, backing up Mitchell Robinson? Is it Jericho Sims taking a leap? Is it Julius Randle playing at the five sometimes? Like, how are they going to kind of navigate this? Is it Precious and Julius? Like, how do they kind of piece this together to where we feel confident with that rotation?
Hey, man. If Tibbs don't go to Randle at the five this year, he's just never going to do it.
Nikias, we already...
I know, but I'm just saying, like, in theory, you could have Randle at the five and have, like, OG and Josh Hart and Mikal Bridges. And, like, if, you know, if Jalen Brunson's getting the rest, you get Dante. So you do just have, like, collective size across the board. Like, obviously, Dante more slender guard, but, like, he's 6'5". So, like, in theory, like, they have the lineup combination to where they can legitimately do it if they want to. So that's where I'm more so making a commentary. Okay, you actually have enough like threes or fours to do it. And so if Tibbs doesn't do it this year, like he's just fundamentally against it. He's seen enough. It's just never going to happen. This is kind of where I was at with that. To your point, I was really interested in seeing how Precious would fit. Because like some of the fun with Precious in Miami and Toronto was, hey, this is a big that can oddly do a lot of stuff with the ball. The problem is he wants to do a bunch of stuff with the ball, then that can go a variety of ways. And so I knew he would always play hard. He's going to defend hard. And so for that part, that was always going to fit Tibbs and his ethos. I just didn't know what the Tibbs reaction was going to be the first time Precious tries to go coast to coast and misses three open people and misses a layup. And the fact that Precious has just largely been, I catch the ball on the perimeter, I'm going to hand off. I'm not taking five threes in a game. I'm going to hand off. I'm going to screen. I'm going to dive. And then just did the defense stuff on top of that. It was just a really mature run for him with New York. And so nice to see him back. To your point, like there, I don't think there is a direct replacement for what Isaiah Hartenstein did, particularly as a passer. But is there a world in which like the defense feels, even if it's like statistically better, does it feel better with this combination of players now? And maybe be able to throw in different things and have a little bit more size, especially if you're factoring like Jericho Sims might grow, get better with some of the off-ball intricacies. Like you're sprinkling him in for regular season minutes. Do you have more of a vertical element to your big man room now by necessity? Because Mitchell Robinson comes back, you know what he can do is a lob threat. Jericho again, Precious again. Like what did those offensive looks look like? And how does that help the guards? You know, so happy for Precious. Excited to see what it looks like. Other point of news that we have so far, unless I've missed something on Twitter at this point, Gordon Hayward announcing his retirement. In 14 seasons with across Utah, Charlotte, Boston, and Oklahoma City, most recently, 15.2 points, 4.4 rebounds, 3.5 assists. Lone all-star appearance was during the 2016-2017 season. His last year in Utah, he averaged a career high 21.9 points per game, converted 51% of his twos, shot 40% from three, grabbed five boards, dished out nearly four assists, and racked up a steal per game that led to the Boston signing and ultimately the unfortunate injury in game one of that first Boston season. And career naturally changed from there, was still able to become a productive player after the injury, but certainly didn't reach the all-star levels that we had saw from him previously. But just a quick salute to Gordon Hayward. Like at his best, he was really good and could, as we've talked about my like favorite player archetypes, a big wing that could handle pass, shoot, can defend well enough across multiple positions. Like those are generally my types of guys. Like Gordon Hayward very much at his peak was my type of wing that could just do a little bit of everything. Hate that the injury kind of curtailed that portion of it. Would have been really interesting to see like what full-fledged Gordon Hayward looked like with that Boston group when he first got there. But so salute on a solid NBA career.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's where my mind goes to. But also that Utah run where it was like, hey, would you like a pull-up? That's fine. Would you like a drive? That's fine. Like he had the respect that I think you'll see when people go, oh, Gordon Hayward was a problem in the next like 2 to 3 months or over the next 4 to 5 years, however that works. What could have been with that Boston team, especially with the way they were playing and how he fit into what they needed? Like, that's kind of that what if. And I think it was kind of like watching Gordon Hayward try to work A through that and find like the aggression versus trying to do the right thing and playing for the pass and when to attack. And so I think for me, that was why I kind of enjoyed the Charlotte run a little bit, especially early on where you could kind of see him looking to attack. You kind of had the I'm cutting from the weak side looking to score. You had the I'm going to screen for Devontae Graham or Terry Rozier, and that's going to be our staple, and you have to deal with it all the time. There were fun moments in that run, so it was kind of nice to watch him kind of work through that and again show people what he could do. Wish the OKC run had ended a little bit different, but that is what it is. But salute for a great career. I mean, that's a long time to have done a lot of things at a high level in the NBA. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously you remember the Butler run if you're of a certain age, but.
Yeah, ain't nobody have an answer for Gordon Hayward, dog.
Yeah. So, I mean, salute to Gordon Hayward.
There we go. And I'm trying to think, because I was racking my brain on how the restricted free agency for Gordon Hayward worked when he was in Utah. Because I remember being annoyed by, as you know, what my restricted free agency thoughts are generally. I want to say it was Charlotte that offered him the max deal. And he was like, hey, please, no. And Utah was like, hi, I hear you, match. You were actually no. Or that was going to be the bit. Or maybe there was like a... Or I actually, the bit may have been Charlotte like offered him a 3-year max instead of a 4-year max. And then they matched it. And then he's hit free agency a year earlier. And that led to the Boston signing. I believe that might have been what it was. But like, those are the shenanigans that also pop up when it comes to Gordon Hayward for me on the basketball side. So, you know, he was just really good. I was kind of surprised. Like, you know, my thoughts on the OKC run, it would have been nice to see him be a little bit more aggressive as a scorer as things closed out. But like, I didn't get the sense that he was just like done when watching him. It was more, hey, you can pick your spots. You can be more aggressive now. So I'm kind of surprised that he didn't, or maybe this kind of led to it. Maybe he already didn't really want to be in that kind of like 18 minute role. And maybe the contenders that he thought would be interesting weren't interested. I don't know. I don't have that background. But just like conceptually, I was just kind of surprised. Like he could still provide, I think, playoff value. Like even if the OKC fit wasn't the one, it's not like he can't still drive past shoot. So I was kind of surprised that is it. And then I had to zoom out. Like, well, it's still been 14 years. Like that's a long career still. So salute to Gordon Hayward. That's all we got. To the mailbag. Thank you again to those who sent in questions. And once again, if you have basketball questions for us on the NBA side or the W side, or just basketball concept questions, dunkerspot@yahoo.com is the email to hit us up at.
Before you go to the mailbag, can I annoy you real quick with things you may have missed?
Sure.
So, Ty Washington to the Phoenix Suns on a 2-way contract.
Oh.
There you go.
Okay. Well, there we go. Shout out Ty Washington. Also, shout out Chuma Okeke getting the Exhibit 10 deal with the New York Knicks. I will never quit Chuma. So we'll see if he ends up making the actual roster.
Hey, what's his height?
New York. What is Chuma listed as? I feel like I had a realization like he was not as tall as I thought he was. I feel like I thought he was always like 6'8", and he's like 6'6", or something like that.
6'7", is what it says here.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, sure enough, 6'6", on Basketball Reference. So
a 6'7" wing that you won't give up on, huh?
I see what you're doing here. I see. Well played, Mr. Steve. Well played. To the mailbag. This one coming from Tony, who starts with, aha, what up, Dunk Kings? I respect that. I've heard you guys talk about fantasy basketball on the pod in the past, and I'm not sure if either of you play. I'd guess not. But I'm the kind of sicko who plays in several 30-team full dynasty keeper leagues. Some of those are full salary leagues, and one has a unique bidding and free agency system. Okay.
Good God, man.
See, cap? No, I'm just kidding. But as you may expect in a dynasty, the rookie draft is a huge part of the strategy and can make or break a team's future. It tends to function a lot like the real NBA, rebuilding teams focusing on long-term upside and contending teams looking for guys who can step in and contribute. So to my question, when evaluating prospects from a franchise building standpoint, is there a certain amount of skills that you two think are the most teachable or easiest to develop at the NBA level? For instance, you are evaluating two guard prospects, and they each have their respective set of strengths and weaknesses. For one, the weaknesses are things like athleticism, foot speed or hip mobility, and on-ball defense. For the other, it's three-point shooting, offensive awareness, and off-ball defense. Which prospect has a better chance of succeeding at the next level? I think it's more than just mental versus physical weaknesses, but maybe it's just that simple. Said another way, if you could build a prospect in a lab and they had a set of weaknesses, which weaknesses would you pick to feel the most confident that they could be developed at the NBA level? Of course, I realize huge contributing factors to that is team situation, coaching, and context, but I'm choosing to abstract away from that for this discussion.
Tony is a true dunker because I was about to spend the first 30 seconds.
No, I know, but...
Tony said, hey, Steve, you can't do the context, coach, you can't do any of that. None of that nonsense.
No.
So I'm going to scroll back up to the initial one. And salute. Hey, a 30-team dynasty league doesn't seem ideal, or like it seems hard to do. Not going to lie to you. So what I would say is I'm going to go back to the first comparison that he made, right? So between two, the weaknesses are things like athleticism, foot speed, hip mobility, and on-ball defense. The other, it's three-point shooting, offensive awareness, and off-ball defense. I would probably feel more comfortable as a coach in my ability to improve the second portion than the first portion. Now, Tony, you can't escape me because I want to know what the strengths of the first person is. Because I'm assuming that they can dig, this is like one can do this and the other can't, right? So I'm assuming that person who doesn't have the athleticism, foot speed, mobility, and on-ball defense can shoot. They can but shoot. I don't, I can't necessarily, I'm only going to get your on-ball defense so good, you know? And so you can do a do your job type beat, but if teams decide they're going to attack you and now you're not making shots, I'm in a pickle. If you're just not athletic, you know, I'm in a tough spot to where, okay, we need you to do this. Clearly you can't do that. So for me, I feel like, okay, even if the three-point shooting is there, we've seen enough players come in that didn't have the three-point shooting label and became three-point shooters to believe that's a thing that we can work on. There's more time for you to work on your craft. Like, I believe that's something we can get done. Offensive awareness, we can watch film. But what's your job? We can get that up. Off-ball defense, we can watch film. We can get that up. I feel like there's enough around it where we can at least make this usable, as opposed to, not to say you need all the athleticism in the world to contribute, but if that's going to be your heel, I personally, with a polo on, can't necessarily fix that. I coach around it, but I don't know how much I'm growing your game. You know what I mean?
I got you. Now, this is a fun question. Like, initially, I did the Nikias thing. I was like, ooh, let me see if I can try to guess which guard prospects Tony might be thinking about here. And I just gave up after, like, actually, I don't want to admit how many minutes it took for me to give up on that. But I gave up after an indeterminate amount of minutes.
Can I give a guess and see if I'm in the ballpark?
What's up?
52.
It wasn't quite that high. I didn't go full. I ain't go full blown to guys, but okay. I did think about it for quite a bit. No, you good. You good. And like the fact that you can start your guess there kind of says a lot about me, but that is neither here nor there. As far as the teachable things, like I would probably try my hand at the latter. And like part of that is like my own information deficit when it comes to like building out, or I guess like just improving athleticism, stuff like that. Like I talked about this on the pod before. Like I just don't know enough about how much can you really improve, you know, lateral quickness and stuff like that. Or like how much can a player reasonably like add weight, add strength, stuff like that. Like those are things that I am aware of the concept and I have a basic understanding, but like I'm not super well versed in it. And so with that, also adding this context, like I would just feel more comfortable about, okay, we can kind of drill out 3-point shooting. Or depending on what our offense is, you can kind of teach this player, okay, these are the cuts that may be available if our star player gets attention from here. Or when we do this, this is where you may be spaced in the corner. If we are dialing up a cut from the wing, you now need to lift from the wing. Like I feel like there are concepts you can kind of teach on that front. And with off-ball defense, a player that popped in my head, not a guard, but a player that dropped in my head as I was going through this question and listening to your answer was Michael Porter Jr., who like still isn't a plus-plus in that regard, but you can see like rookie year Michael Porter Jr. as an off-ball defender is not the Michael Porter Jr. that we see today. And so like I feel like you can drill out some stuff, especially if your scheme and your coaching is consistent. We know this is what we want to do on the baseline level. So I would probably lean the latter because as far as I know, anyway, even if you can improve athleticism, there's still like a ceiling to how much you can improve that. Like to use 2K as an example, you're not going to go from 74 speed to 92 speed. You know what I mean? It might be 74 to 78, and that would make a difference for sure. But like, I don't think you can make that kind of jump. Whereas to the Steve example with shooting, like we have seen either average shooters become good. We've seen bad shooters become average or slightly above average. Like I feel like there's more room to make that kind of improvement. And if you can drill the rest of it out, like I think I would feel better about the latter than the former. And I think that is that. Next one going to come from Jason, who says, "Dear Nikias and Steve, longtime NBA fan, first time WNBA viewer." There we go. "I was very surprised to see the minutes that some top WNBA players are playing, 38 plus minutes or the whole game quite often. Why is that the case? Puts in parentheses, I'm from Hong Kong, so I don't know how it compares to college basketball or Europe League where they play 40 minutes. Do you think it affects their performance in the fourth? Is there any concern for them going into the playoffs or long-term health or success?
Kind of intrigued to see your answer for a very specific reason. I will see if you pick up on it. I think for me, it's one, I just think the season is, I don't want to say condensed, but it is kind of where it is for a reason. If that makes sense, like it's a sprint to a degree. So I think sometimes it's hard to like these games go by quick. So it's hard to, hey, we need Arike to play. We sat Arike. Arike came back. Oh, wait, Arike didn't get a second blow. Like if you're the Sun last year, listen, Thomas was second in the league with 36.2 minutes played. They needed every single one of those. Like we just couldn't, we couldn't be us without that on the floor. Jewel Lloyd, 35 minutes a night last year. Stewie, 34. Like, I think it's just these players are so good and important to their teams. It's hard to navigate and find those ways to sit them when we need every win, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sure the minutes for Caitlin Clark probably weren't planned to be 35, but it's like, well, Caitlin Clark makes our team very good. Also, Caitlin Clark would like to keep playing. I think a lot of these players want to stay in the game. That's another part of it. Like, yeah, it's hard to pull some people out sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that probably is the biggest difference right off the top for me. I don't necessarily think it affects their performance in my head. I've never felt like, hey, that's never been my bit, though. I've never been like that. They're gassed. Yeah.
Yeah. It's,
like, I've never looked at Las Vegas Aces and been like, hey, they said, I don't think they have it. No, they'll be fine.
They'll be fine. Can I ask you a question? Yeah. A genuine question? Yeah. I guess, like, with that in particular, like, I don't, you know, not subscribing to like the gas thing and stuff like that. Like how much of that is just your former experience as an athlete?
A lot of it.
Yeah.
A lot of it. You'll find a way. Fourth quarter time.
There's always, there you go. Just push it on through, big dog. I feel you. I would say a lot of it is exactly what Steve said. Hey, you are really good. You make us really good. The depth behind you is not where we need to be to where we can afford to, like, you know, manage your minutes to a degree, at least with most teams. Like, there are some where you can kind of afford. Like, with New York, like, I imagine, especially this year, New York, they could probably have Stewie at 29 or 30 if they wanted to. Or have her, like, 28 for, like, the first month and a half of the season if they wanted to. Because they also have Jonquel. They also have Sabrina. You know, Benaja's out right now, but they also have Benaja, et cetera. And, like, with the Aces, I know a lot of folks have been clamoring for over the last couple of years, like, hey, it'd be cool if they had bench minutes so you didn't have to have these 38-minute nights from Jackie or from Kelsey, et cetera. But I think a lot of it is just there's a pretty big gap between, like, the stars and some of the reserves on teams in the league. And I think that is a lot of just the league being smaller itself and what the roster spot and just the general roster situation is in the league. And so from there, it's just how much can we afford to sit you? Like, I think going to the Connecticut Sun example from last year, like, I'm sure they would have loved to have had Alyssa Thomas play more like 30 minute or 31 minute games versus the amount of 40 plus minute games that she logged when you factor in overtime with some of those with the Sun last year. But like, there's just a general quality difference. Also, these athletes are competitive. Like, I think that's the biggest thing, or one of the biggest things I've learned with like covering the Aces the way that I have in particular. It feels like every other presser is Becky alluding to. Asia's super well conditioned. Kelsey's really well conditioned. Jackie's really well conditioned. They also just don't want to come out, and I trust them. And so if they're good to go and they want to play and they're really good, I'm just going to let them play. And so a lot of it is just like a coaching thing. I do think if this was this season is more condensed, at least early on, because of the Olympic break. But I think in general, like, if instead of a 40-game schedule, it was like 60, then I think you would see minute distribution look a little bit different, for sure. I think we've seen it on the NBA side. Like, it's just been 82 for forever at this point. But as they've learned more about, like, managing minutes and things like that. Again, the rosters are bigger. The games are longer, so you don't want to play them 40-plus minutes anyway. It's kind of easier to kind of talk the players into, hey, let's just sit you for a little bit, or let's just keep you out of this one. With the W, to Steve's point, it's a sprint. Like, if the Lynx were to say, hey, Fee, you're logging a lot of minutes, we're going to sit you tonight against Washington, and Washington actually wins that game, with the way the playoff race has been this year, that could legit be the difference between the Lynx at 3 and the Lynx at 5 or something like that, with the season being shorter. So I think that's also part of, like, we don't have, I think there's just a general, the W doesn't have the same leeway to do that as we may see it on the NBA side. And then the last one coming from Justin, who says, hey, Nikias and Steve, what are some W lineups you want to see get more run? I'll throw some out. For the Atlanta Dream, Jordan Canada, Alicia Gray, Ryan Howard, Nia Coffey, and Nas Hillman. With the Fever, Aaliyah Boston and Timmy Fagmanlay at the 4 and 5, just getting that front court more minutes. And with Minnesota, not Courtney Williams at point guard, which,
dang,
that is just, that's tough.
Man, that's crazy. You got to give the substitute there. That seems like
you just what is the too many mid range jumpers for you? Like that? What is the what's she the
doesn't bit, drive very bro? Well? Doesn't drive very well for them.
Tell you what. But anyway, so Steve, what are some lineups you'd like to see more of post Olympic break?
I'm going to cheat real quick.
Okay.
The Marina Mabry, DeWanna Bonner, Dejanay Carrington, Alyssa Thomas, Bree Jones lineup that we've never seen before.
Hey, that's bad. I mean, I guess that counts. We'll send it to the judges, but.
No. Let's see. I would like to see more of like Sabrina, Benai Jelani, Leo Phoebish, Stewie, and Jonquel Jones, for me personally.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think if there's any others in my head. That's all I got right now. What you got?
I'd say just bouncing off of the Liberty example, like if we could get, I guess just in general, like just Stewie at the 5. Would be something I'd just be generally interested in. Can we get Sabrina and Benaja and Kayla and Leo and Stewie? And let's just have all of the fun. For the Aces, just can we just get the full blown starter, Chelsea Gray? Like that'd be cool. But no, Chelsea, Kelsey, Jackie, Alicia and Asia, just generally just like watching that lineup. And if you want to go Tiffany Hayes instead of Alicia Clark, just go just the 4 guards. Or I guess 3.5 guards, because like I always just struggle with what do we designate Jackie, because she's just been the Aces 3, but she is a guard, so it's just kind of weird. But either way, small around Asia at the 5 would certainly be one. If we are going to like cheating, like I would just like to see the Washington Mystics ideal starting lineup. Like that would be cool. Can we see Brittany Sykes and Ariel Atkins and Shakira Austin on the floor all at the same time? I personally, as a basketball fan, would really enjoy that. Beyond that, I'm glad that they're
who goes to the bench in that Mystics lineup, huh, bud?
Like I think you keep Stephanie Dolson in there, and then from that's all you wanted. You don't even care. You're not fooling me. No, the 3-point shooting is very valuable, et cetera. So you ain't gonna do that.
I'll give a Lynx one while you're thinking.
Yeah, go ahead.
Let's go Kayla McBride, Bridget Carlton, Alana Smith, Nafisa Collier, Dorca Juhas.
Ooh. Actually, that just sparked something for me. Extreme sensationalist voice. Are you worried about Diamond Miller in Minnesota?
No.
Okay.
I just hope she gets healthy, but no, I'm not worried.
Okay. I think you've made the point before, where it's like, I don't want her to get lost in Minnesota finding itself and being really good. And it's like, well, actually, hey, those drives are cool. You have 14 minutes, and that is just kind of it. But I think Diamond just has a world of potential, and she can be really good. So that's more so what it is. Not necessarily like it's not going to be bad, just... Do we see her regain like the starting position at any point? If not this season, the next season, like do we see like the full evolution of her with this team? But as I'm thinking about it, like I'm honestly just on the lineup front, I'm really curious to see like where Chicago goes with their starting group. like, are you immediately starting Rachel Banham just to get more shooting out there? Or like, how are they going to do that? Is a question that I have with Chicago. As far as other lineup combinations, I really like that Atlanta one.
Well, Freddie got some bad news.
I mean, yeah, because yeah. Get well soon, Jordan, et cetera. Also.
Oh, Tina. Sorry.
Yeah, that's, yeah. Yeah. Those minutes are there. that is going to be that for sure. And I guess just with Seattle, if for no other reason than like the plus minus on the lineup has just been absurd all year. Skylar and Jewel and Sammy and NECA and Ezzy. That grouping has been very good all season long with low minutes. I know it's been an up and down year for Sammy, but the shooting matters. So more of that lineup would be cool. I'm trying to think, is there anything else pressing? Again, like similar to the Washington injury division. Like I just want to see the Sparks back. But actually on that note, just a quick hat tip to Azaree Stevens, who's just been just balling out of her mind since he made her return to the lineup. But actually, I'll toss you a question on the Chicago front. How would you feel about Dana plus Kennedy minutes?
I think that's been answered.
Well, I mean, like, now, you know, the roster's different now. So I just, you know. Do you need more of the, you know, the scoring part, et cetera?
I think that's been answered.
You know what? On that note, thank you for listening to this episode of the Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, where you get your podcasts. You can find us. You can follow me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter. We're having fun in there. More importantly, join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties. The link is in the podcast description. It is free to create your profile. No shenanigans. We are watching / talking through Olympic hoops.
Do you want to kick it?
We are.
If you want to kick it, just click the link. Yeah. All right. But
yes, we can. Hey, the Steve cut in means it is time for us to get out of here. We bid you adieu.
We're good. We're good. I was just remixing it because if you would like to kick it, it's a little different. So off season, we got. I thought you were gonna list all the options out, but then you did not, which means my interruption just looks like I'm a jerk, and I didn't want that to be the case. No. I was just trying to emphasize your outro, and I have dribbled the ball off my foot. This is very unfortunate.
This is deeply unfortunate. We're to our dear pal Matt, but no, we talking / watch Olympic hoops, watching for wrestling, which that's just been a journey. SummerSlam on Saturday, so that's neat. But a whole lot of video games have been played, a whole lot of college football, 25, Fortnite, Fall Guys, 2K has been on stream. One of our dear pals was playing Spider-Man 2, I believe, on stream yesterday. So like we are just bouncing around. If you have a Twitch or a YouTube, you want to stream some games and talk with us along, we just do that. Especially while we're still in the Olympics / All-Star break. So come rock with us. Come have some fun. Don't bring your nonsense, though, I will say. Like, we have a good time. We joke, et cetera. This is an inclusive space. So if that's not your vibe, you're not our vibe, et cetera. But I would imagine if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably cool either way. So quick disclaimer there, but we have a lot of fun. So come rock with us if you would like.
Hey, Nikai, it's very rare that I say something of value after the outro, but in 198 minutes, Kennedy Carter, Dana Evans, 93.2 offensive rating, 107.2 defensive rating.
I think they have their
answers. I think it's been answered.
Okay, well, there we go. We will see y'all next week.
I feel bad for Rhea Ripley.